For those of you who are unaware, I am Lord Gideon Grey, one of the greatest wrestlers ever to live, an orchestrator, if you will, for the United Empire, the single greatest faction to ever exist. And you are listening to Wrestle In.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the March episode of the Purovision podcast. I am Jamie Johnson, your host, and alongside me this month, Fuser, how are you?
Oh, man, I am tired.
It's been one of those moments. I feel like I'm in your boat there. We've been tired and I've not had time to watch much wrestling, but I don't think I've really wanted to, some of the wrestling that has been happening in Japan this past month.
Oh, my God, no. Yeah, start off the month great with AEW Revolution, and it's kind of just been downhill from there.
Yeah, it really, really has. Usually in March, you talk about the New Japan Cup first, but we're not going to do that for a few different reasons, but we'll get to those a bit later on. We're going to start instead with a bit of DDT and DDT Judgment. It's worth mentioning Kay is not with us this month, but hopefully they'll be back next month, all being well. So the DDT, that was the thing that reminded me there, Fuser. We've obviously... Kay knows a lot more about DDT than I do, but we're going to talk about some DDT, and we will talk about some Dragon Gate a bit later on as well, actually. But we'll start with DDT Judgment from the 17th of March, and we'll start with the main event because it was a 6-hour show, and I have not sat through the whole 6 hours. I don't know who signed that idea off, but it happened. The main event, though, was Yuki Ueno defending his KOD Openweight Championship successfully against Harashima. And this is just a proper KOD title match. That's the way I felt about it, really, because I watch a lot of these sort of KOD title matches with whoever's been champion, whether it be Endo or Ueno or Hino, Higuchi. This style and this sort of energy that this match had, that is what I associate with that title. It had real drama, and the closing stretch was magnificent. I mean, that'd be something I talk about a few times during this podcast, really, on a few of the matches we've got to talk about. But it was absolutely great. Harashima's always been a real favourite of mine. He's always been someone I sort of attracted towards in DDT, and I think it made for a nice match here. He's more kicking and martial art is probably not the right word, but that sort of style against Ueno is more high-flying. So I think it worked really well on that level as well, of it just working really well as an exciting back-and-forth main event.
Yeah, for sure. Definite match of the year contender, like without a doubt, like top of the list, just right up there with some of the best of the year. For sure, DDT's match of the year so far. This was... like, if you weren't behind Yuki Ueno's title reign so far, frankly, what are you doing? But watch this match if you haven't, or if you're not behind him yet, because this is, like, will definitely change your mind if you think Ueno is worthy of holding that title, if you think he's worthy to be up at, like, the level of ace for DDT, because personally, after this one, he's there. Like, if he holds the title for like the rest of the year, then arguably I think it's safe to call him the ace of DDT.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I mean, probably you're right. I mean, there's no one else to fill that mantle. Obviously now Takeshita's no longer full time with DDT, and he is the successor to that. I think he's in a much better shape to do that than say a Tetsuya Endo. And I mean, they're the only two options, aren't they? In a way of, Higuchi's he's a great figurehead and a great champion, but he's not an ace of a company, is he, in the way that his style and how he wrestles and his look, I guess, it just doesn't fit like the Japanese ace. But Ueno definitely does. I agree with that. And yeah, this really helps in this, because I've never been the biggest fan of Yuki Ueno, even though I've always enjoyed his big matches. And this was really fantastic. I really did enjoy it. And it's one of the better DDT matches for a long time, probably the best of the year, like you said. I definitely agree with that as well, because DDT's had a bit of a rough year so far, but this was a really great match and sort of testament to what the two of them can do.
Yeah, for sure. Harashima also showed out in this one. He's definitely going to be someone to keep an eye on for the future with DDT. Definitely could see him gain some more title opportunities down the line. He has a killer knee strike. Like, his knees are dangerous. I thought he won the championship a couple times, even like with some of those spots, especially like near the end with the double running knee, like the running double knees. I thought that was it. I thought Ueno's run, like his reign, was just done, and then he barely kicked out.
Yeah, that's one of his things. His knee strike's unbelievable, and that was definitely worth mentioning. That how many great kickouts there were near the end. It was. Really, if people haven't seen it, it's definitely worth watching. And this one's a bit closer to our release date than some of the matches from earlier in the month that we'll talk about. So if people haven't seen this match yet, it's definitely worth checking out because it was, like we've said there, really, really great main event. For me, another match that was, I'd say, on the same level. You called it a match of the year, that one. I don't think I'd quite go that far. But this one, for me, is on the same level, which was the semi-main event, the special singles match. Kinoshita Takeshita returning to DDT to take on All Japan's Yuma Aoyagi. And this was absolutely wonderful. I'll let you go first this time, Fuser. What did you make of it?
God. So when they had that little tag match back in like the end of January, when it was Kinosuke and Hidekiyo Kitani against the Aoyagi brothers, I watched that match and I was like, oh my God. I have to wait until March for these two to go one-on-one. This is going to be such a painful wait. And the wait was 100% worth it. This was just a fantastic match, like one of the stiffer matches of the year. Just full on, like trying to cave each other's chests in, trying to cave each other's skulls in with some of these strikes. I do have to mention the one lady who just kept shouting Kinosuke's name no matter what, even after Yuma like went over to her and was like, what are you doing? Like, I'm well, right
I was,
here.
I was going
to
mention that myself because it was such a fun interaction, wasn't it? I thought we've like, obviously it was all in Japanese and I didn't have an English commentary feed for this one. So, but you don't need the translation in a way because the lady in the front row you was mentioning, she's shouting Kinosuke to know just constantly. Seemingly the top of her lungs. It was unbelievable how loud it was. In cracker and all. And Aoyagi went over, had a few words, and then she carried on, didn't she? It was a lovely little moment. And he kept directing every time he had sort of Kinoshita Takeshita in a hold. He'd look at the lady in the front row, wouldn't he? And it was it's a nice little touch that.
There was, I think it was an elbow drop where like before he did it, he like actually pointed at her like, hey, watch this, and then did it. And the whole time he was like executing the move, she was just yelling Kinosuke. It was like so funny. He was like, you could tell that he was trying to turn her into a fan of his, but unfortunately it just didn't work.
Yeah, but I don't know how it didn't work because it was, again, a wonderful match. It built really nicely from a more steady start, a few sort of holds and your standard opener to a big match like this into just what was a kick out central towards the end. Great intensity is how I described it from Takeshita, and Aoyagi sort of played a nice, I do feel like he played a nice underdog, even though that moment with the lady in the crowd was, maybe that was a little bit of a, like a heelish tendency, you'd say. But he played the underdog very well, especially towards the end. Like Takeshita just kept coming at him with big move after big move after big move. And Aoyagi sort of stood firm and had his own little flashes and near falls, didn't he? So it was a really wonderful match up there with me for the main event. I put them on a level pegging in terms of that. And if you're not going to watch anything else in this month, you'd make it these two matches, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yuma definitely knew that he was the heel coming into this match, of course, being from a different promotion versus one of like the fan favorites of DDT coming back. Just really quick, I'd like to directly speak to someone. Mr. Tony Khan. Hello, Tony. Right to you. Me and you. Don't worry about anyone else. Get a partnership with All Japan. Get these guys in the States. Get these guys on TV. We need to have more people aware of All Japan Pro Wrestling and the talent they offer because they need to just like get that step up. They need to people to be able to recognize their faces and their names. Guys like Kento, Yuma, Nakajima, Hayato, Atsuki, Enzai, etc. Just get these guys on AEW TV, book some dream matches, have some fun with it, do what you do. Thank you.
I'm not too sure about that myself. I think they've got enough wrestlers and they've nicked enough of the wrestlers I like that I don't get to see as often now. So they can leave All Japan alone as far as I'm concerned. Leave me, Kento and Yuma over here. They can keep Edge and Adam Copeland. So the next match was a weird one, I thought. Mao defending his DDT Universal title against Takeshi Masada, and it was just a bit strange. Like, it was the finish was a knockout. It was the softest headbutt known. It was like a pillow he'd got hit over the head with, Masada. It was the softest headbutt ever, and then he followed it up with a very nice kick, actually, sort of a spinning roundhouse kick. And then he got countered out when he was on the mat, and it was only about 5 minutes long. This is what I was going to ask you, Fuse, to see if you can sort of enlighten me. Was that planned, or was he actually knocked out? Because it looked very strange.
I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I think it was planned. DDT is a tricky company to kind of tell these kinds of things, because it 100% could be planned the whole time, where he gets knocked out with like a soft headbutt for comedy purposes. But it's a bit tricky. I think it was planned. Masada didn't seem super like dazed and confused afterwards, like someone who got like legitimately knocked out. It just kind of seemed like the normal like wrestling knocked out. I did, however, tweet the "you got knocked the fuck out" tweet or a gif after after the match ended. sub 5 minutes. I think it was 4:22.
Yeah, that's why I'm sort of tempering what I'm going to say, because if it was a knockout, then obviously sort of my thoughts go out the window. But if that was the plan, I think it was silly, because it could have been a good match, even if they'd give it five more minutes and had a proper finish, because it was, like I say, a really weak headbutt. It wasn't a good finish at all. And after 5 minutes, I mean, it was a little bit pointless in the end, a five-minute match that ends in a knockout. I mean, what's... with Matt, I mean, it just wasn't for me, I think. That was my extent of DDT judgment watching. I didn't get through the rest of the 6 hours, but I know, Fuse, you've got a couple of highlights to pick out from the rest of the show.
Yes, I do. So there was two more matches that happened before the DDT Universal title match. There was the KOD tag title match, which saw Yuki Ino and Tetsuya Endo defend against Ryuki Honda and Yuma Enzai of All Japan, another DDT versus All Japan match. This was also a very, very good tag match, very nice tag title match, ended with Endo and Ino retaining. However, I do want to just quickly discuss what happened after the match. Endo and Ino called out Jun Akiyama to be the next challenger, fellow stablemate. Akiyama said, like, that he has a mystery partner, and the match has been confirmed. It will be Endo and Ino versus Akiyama and X for the KOD tag titles, and I'm thinking the X is Eddie Kingston.
Right, okay.
I think it's Eddie in this scenario. I feel like Eddie would be more than down to come back to Dino. Japan. Oh my god.
Dino ties with Akiyama, isn't he?
He's a third of the six-man tag champs with Akiyama, but no, let me have my own magical fantasy.
I'll let you dream.
Let me dream, Harold. I just want Eddie. Eddie would be a fantastic partner for this match. But yeah, Burning retained, and then the other match was the DDT Extreme title match, which was the stipulation of the Painful Jungle Death Match. This, like, if you saw Sting and Darby versus the Young Bucks, and that was enough blood for you, then come watch this match. This match was a good proper, like, just a death match. A lot of blood, a lot of sharp objects getting stabbed into people's foreheads, a lot of barbed wire, just a good old-fashioned death match that you would expect from a match called a painful jungle death match that saw Shinma Katsumata retain and Hideki Okitani's hair get dyed back to red from his own blood.
I saw that it was called the painful jungle death match, and I thought, I'm not watching that, because if it has to be called painful in the title, then it's horror films. Like, this is a like super scary horror film. It's like, you don't need to tell me it's scary.
Yeah.
But, well, that does surprise me. I might have to go back and watch that then, because a glowing review. So yeah, that might be one I have to go back to see. It's 13 matches on this card.
Yeah, don't go through the entire card.
A lot of wrestling. Just under 1,500 people there, though, in Kraken, so not a bad little attendance from it.
Yeah, it was a good turnout.
Maybe I'll... Yeah, go on. Yeah, so yeah, maybe... Yeah, a good turnout, like you say. Maybe I will go back and watch that DDT Extreme Time match. I did contemplate it. I do like Okatani. So yeah, maybe that will be one to go back to. A match I have seen and do want to talk about, though, is from Dragon Gate. We head over to our little Dragon Gate corner. And it's Mochizuki. This was available on YouTube for anyone who hasn't seen it, and it's definitely worth checking out. It's only 10 minutes. It's the... I don't want to butcher the pronunciation, but the Rey de Perez. Are we going for a fuser?
The Rey de Perez. Wow, I butchered it. Don't worry. The Rey de Perez. Yes.
The Rey de Perez. Well, I think we get the message. And it was on the 6th of March. Mochizuki against Rey Feuder, I think is how you pronounce that. He's not someone I've ever come across before, and I was pleasantly surprised. This match, as I say, available on YouTube. It's the Dragon Gate YouTube, this one. 10 minutes long and 100% worth watching. It was such a fun 10 minutes. It was a great opener to the show. I think it's exactly what you want from an opener. Mochizuki, sort of more of that experienced head against Feuder, who sort of seemed to me as sort of a young, fiery underdog in this match. Lots of kicks, lots of strikes, lots of counter sequences that were absolutely fantastic. So slick, and they moved amazingly through this match. And I genuinely really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, Ryu Feuder is only been wrestling for a couple of years. He debuted in late November of 2021. 22 years old versus Mochizuki's 54, yes. So it's very much a like old guard versus young gun kind of match. Feuder showed that he's capable of. Another bright piece to the future of Dragon Gate. And Mochizuki showed why he's still going at 54.
Definitely. Yeah, it's 100% worth watching, like I've said. I guess it's one of those matches that really sort of fit what I like from wrestling, in that it was so quick in how they got from one section of a match to another, and the transitions were lovely and lots of strikes, and Mochizuki sort of taunting Feuder, wasn't it? It's like, come on, hit me sort of thing quite a lot in this match. So it was one of those really that right up my alley. That was the extent, though, of my Dragon Gate watching. You, though, Fuser, have watched the main event from the same show, haven't you, March the 6th?
Yes. The main event was the Country Masters, Jackie Funky Kame and Jason Lee taking on Big Hug, the team of Hayo and Luis Mante, which are the Brave Gate and Open the Dream Gate champions. This was a very good match as well, worth checking out if you can. Good kind of like setting the standard for the rest of the Rey de Perez tournament. This is their, if you're not familiar, this is Dragon Gate's World Tag League, basically. And there's actually a bit of an upset where Kame and Jason Lee actually beat Hayo and Louis Monte, despite them having the two top belts in the, or two top singles belts in the promotion. So, not a great start to the tournament for Big Hug, with 0 points and an upset loss in the main event. But overall, very good match. Good ground game to start at the beginning, and then evolved into a more stiffer, high-paced match between the four men, which saw Hayo taking the pin. I think it was Jackie that pinned him. So potential Bravegate championship match there in the future.
Fantastic. We've made Kay proud this month. We've both given glowing reviews to Dragon Gate. So two matches that sound definitely worth watching there.
We kept the corner nice and warm for them.
Exactly, yeah. We've kept it nicely kept, haven't we? And the flower bed is rosy in the Dragon Gate corner. It's reasonably rosy over in All Japan as well, which is the next place we'll go, as we push New Japan as far back in this podcast as we can. I want to talk about one match, but before we get there, we will discuss the Champions Carnival, which will happen in April. April the 18th is the opening match for that. The participants have been announced, though. I'm going to read them out to you to try not to butcher too many of the pronunciations, and you can let me know what you think. So in block A, we've got Ishino, Miyahara, Yumo Ayuagi, Omari, Ren Ayabi, which is his first appearance there, Cyrus, who he was in it last year, wasn't he? And this is a name I'm not familiar with, even though he was in the tournament last year, Korishui, Tokyo, Japan. So what do you make of Block A?
Eek, man. Block A is stacked to the brim. It's the first four names alone from that block is enough to make me excited for this tournament. Kirisho is going to be the joke guy. He's going to take most of the pins and get the one or two upsets. He's going to be the excuse me. He's going to be the Yano, yeah, he's going to be the Yano of the tournament, 100%.
That makes sense, yeah.
But yeah, Kento, Yuma going at it again. Shotaro, Kento, Shotaro, Yuma. Just, so much to look forward to in that A block.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. Ishino, Miyahara, Ayuagi, Amori, that sort of just sounds amazing on paper, doesn't it, those four? And Cyrus, for his part, was all right last year. He was a good laugh. I remember watching a couple of his matches. He's a big lad sort of style, and it was they were passable 5-10 minutes of okay wrestling. And that'll do for me in terms of an undercard on a Champions Carnival. Block B as well. We'll talk about who we think is going to win after we talk about Block B. And in Block B is Suwama, Ryuki Honda, Jun Saito, Yuma Anzai, Hideki Suzuki, and two first-time appearances, which is Hartley Jackson, who I've never heard of, and Road Crew / Lord Crew, who I also have never heard of. This is all coming from Fightful, the lineup I'm reading out here. So what do you make of Block B, then?
Block B isn't as exciting as Block A, in my opinion. There is still potential for some good matches there, though. Riki Honda, Yuma Anzai going one-on-one with how much they've been tagging together recently. Suwama with Honda and Anzai. Hideki Suzuki might be able to show out in that block as well. He has to face his own tag partner, which he's a co-champion with in Suwama. So a lot of potential with the B block, but it's just not as enticing compared to the A block. And actually, there was two other names that was announced for the tournament. That was I think it was a few days after they announced the blocks originally. They announced a couple more names, that Davey Boy Smith Jr. is in the A block and Rei Saito is in the B block.
Oh dear.
So a couple more names to kind of throw into the tournament. Which makes the B block a little bit more enticing, because another Jin versus Rey match, that's always something that I would want to see again.
Why did they not all get announced at the same time?
I'm actually not too sure about it, because they revealed the blocks in the first place, on the which show was it? It was one of the shows earlier, so I think it was the first night of the Dream Power series. They announced the blocks originally, and then afterwards they announced like Davey Boy Smith and Ray as well in the tournament. I'm not sure if it was a thing where like they were supposed to be originally announced and they ended up getting like pushed back because they weren't sure if they're going to like be medically cleared or something, and then they ended up getting cleared so they got added afterwards, or I don't know what the whole story of that is, but it's two more names, the more the merrier.
Well, you said the more the merrier. One of those names is David Boy Smith Jr., so I don't know about that. The grey carpet of professional wrestling. In terms of who you think's going to win the blocks then, well, actually, on Block B, something you mentioned to pick up on, Suwama and Hideki Suzuki, that I think that'll be a great match. I'm a big fan of both of them, really. Honda is always one to look out for, and Yuma Anzai, of course, has got a little bit more momentum, hasn't he, with that sort of the gauntlet and the match against Fushi that we talked about the other month, and he's got a match coming up against Nakajima for the title, which I'm sure we'll talk about next month, because that's a very interesting one. But it's two interesting blocks, more star-studded names in A block, but I guess it's more tightly contested in B block before you get to the unknown factors of these two debutants. So who do you think is gonna make it out with a Champions Carnival win?
So with B block, I'm thinking it will be I think Honda is going to come out of the B block. As for the A block, it's this one's kind of anyone's game. Like, depends if they what they want to do about Omori, if they want to give Kento another final, see if he can win it and then challenge Nakajima again. Yuma could go for a rematch. I think this is Yuma's year. And then in the final,
Yuma Ayagi, yeah?
Yeah, I think this is Yuma's year. I think he's going to go all the way.
And then who you got in the final then? Ayagi versus Honda.
Ayagi versus Honda, yeah.
And you've got Ayagi, yeah. I think that's interesting. I think it's one of those actually where it's really wide open, because I feel like we could pick four or five names and make a very good case that they'll win this tournament. I'm swaying towards Kenta Miyahara at the minute, in that because it'll set up then obviously the match with Nakajima, won't it? In that he'll have a reason then to challenge again with that. Because he'll have won the Champions Carnival. So that's what I'm going to go for Miyahara. As for B block, I do think Honda's a very good shout. Just in the sake of being different, I'll go for Yuma Anzai. Obviously, they put a bit more stock in him, haven't they, recently? Mm-hmm. And didn't Honda get to the final last year? So I losing two finals in a row might not be the best for him. If he didn't get to the final, he definitely got close, didn't he?
I gotta be completely honest, I started watching All Japan after the Champion Carnival.
These sort of things really sort of pass my mind. He either lost in the final to Ishino, or he lost in the last block match to Ishino. It's one of the two.
He did not make the final. The final was Ishino and T-Hawk. And he was also...
Yeah, it was, yeah. That was good.
He was also not in the same block as Ishino.
Was he not? I don't know where I've got that from then. But either way... Maybe we'll get to the final then. That blows my theory out the water. So there you are. I'll go for Honda. I'll change my mind. But I'm going to have Miyahara for the winner of this year's Champions Carnival. The match I wanted to talk about from this month was a little 5-minute sprint of a match. A very technical, lots of kicks, lots of strikes, lots of... grappling, and it was Katsuhiko Nakajima against Fumino Abe from the 12th of March. And I don't know if you've seen this one, Fuser, but it's one that I absolutely adored. It's my style of wrestling down to a T.
I have seen this match. No surprise there. But I am pleased with how Nakajima's All Japan run has went so far. Initially, when he came in, I thought it was going to be a little thing where he was going to wrestle like a handful of matches against the top guys and then sign somewhere else. But like, he's really like in All Japan to stay. is what it feels like, at least, where like he's actually like he's still having these major matches, but he's also like going out of his way to have these matches against guys like Fuminori Abe and working with like Hakuto Omori, Yuma Enzai, etc. Like it feels like that, like he's like part of the roster for like long term instead of what a lot of people thought was going to be, where he's just going to come in, win the title, do some matches, drop the title back to probably like Kento or someone, and then go sign somewhere else.
Yeah, I feel that's probably about right, really. But I think he's been a bit of a revelation, hasn't he, in All Japan, in like what you've said, that he has stuck around and not just sort of dipped in and out for the big matches. He's, and this match against Anzai, I guess, is sort of the epitome of that, isn't he? Because he's going to beat Anzai almost 100%, but it provides something to push Anzai forward, and he's helping the next crop of talent in All Japan, isn't he? Which is always nice to see. We will suspend New Japan complaining just one more, just a few more minutes, because you did watch a Noah match. We do like to get a little bit of Noah in on the podcast. I haven't seen it, and you'll know why, because it's a 30-minute draw between Jake Lee and Kazuyuki Fujita. Fuser, though, you are a glutton for punishment. You have watched this match, and I'm sure you absolutely hated it.
It was so slow. If I were to talk at the pace of the match, then like I should be talking even slower than I am currently. So this was a slugfest, and not a slugfest in the way of they were hitting each other with all they got. It was a slugfest in the way of I would rather watch two slugs wrestle than watch this match again. That's what I mean. This thing was slow. This thing was nothing. I was so annoyed by the end of it because it was just a pile of nothing. I have two matches from Noah this year on my worst of list. This one and Ibushi versus Mara Fuji, for obvious reasons. And the worst part is, after this match, Jake Lee said that if he wins the title from Wagner Jr., he wants a rematch with Fujita. Jake, well, why? Stop. No, why?
Yeah, well, I'm glad I've not seen it, I'll leave it there. I have seen a couple of matches, though, from the New Japan Cup, which will be our last port of call, a little bit more of a quicker podcast this month. Before we go into specifics, I've watched a few matches that I want to pick out and praise, some positives, four or five matches that I've watched so far in the tournament, but I feel it's worth talking about as an overall, of the fact that, much like for me, that New Japan sort of killed off my interest in the G1, I guess a year or two ago. Like, gone are the days where I remember one year I was on holiday and I'd wake up every morning, hotel breakfast, and then go and sit somewhere, either outside, to watch the G1 matches, and then get on with my day after that. And that was for a few years. You'd do that every year. You'd get up, watch the G1, then the day starts. But not anymore. And it's the same can be said about the New Japan Cup. It's been dire, really. The blocks itself, when I saw the block announcement, I thought, I have absolutely no interest. I'm interested in about three first round matches. And obviously, when you see ratings on Cage Match, you can be swayed away from watching a match by time, because time isn't infinite, is it? You've not got all the time in the day to be watching House of Torture and Ren Narita having a somehow average match against Zack Sabre Jr. and not a good match. It's been a baffling month in terms of booking decisions for New Japan. And for me, Fusion, my energy is sort of running out with it.
Oh, how much more time we got left on this podcast? Because I have enough energy to use the rest of the time to complain about this. it. So this is by far the worst New Japan Cup tournament since its inception in 2005. This tournament's been going for almost 20 years, and this is not even close to being like second to last. This tournament's dead last in the entire list. Garbage, 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 boring garbage. House of Torture, garbage. Wrong people winning, garbage. People getting eliminated way too hell early in this tournament, garbage. When the tournament was announced, I made two brackets. A bracket of, hey, this is the guys that this is how the tournament should be booked. This is how I think, if I were booking it, this is how it should go. This is who should win it. And then I made a bracket of, this is how Gato has been booking for the last 6 months. This is how I think the tournament's going to go because Gato's stupid. Gato is more stupid than I thought. When I made that bracket, I had Zack Sabre Jr. make it to the semifinals. Zack didn't even get out of his first match.
That is worth mentioning, actually, because I had Zack going a good distance, and he would have in the second round match had a match with Taichi, wouldn't he? And yeah. Taichi lost, and Zack Sabre Jr. then lost, and it's just bonkers.
I don't understand how you the tournaments are supposed to be like the pinnacle of New Japan. These are supposed to be like the things that, like, apart from Wrestle Kingdom, people tune in for. They buy a subscription to New Japan World to watch these tournaments. Why are you making it that people want to just delete their subscriptions? Because honestly, I don't feel like it's worth keeping a New Japan World subscription with how New Japan's being booked right now. It's garbage. It's not even like boring. It's just annoying. Like, the thing is, with this tournament, there's been so many terrible choices, and they got to the semifinal match of Yota Tsuji versus Evil, and Tsuji won that match and has went to the final. But like, they made such a big deal on commentary about how, like, oh, the House of Torture has gotten their comeuppance finally, yeah, with Evil going down, the House of Torture's out of the tournament, and it's like, who cares? The tournament's over. There's one match left. Like, this is the final, and then tournament done. Like, the tournament's already been ruined for the most part, except for the few handful of good matches. And they act like this is going to end up being a change in New Japan because Evil lost in the semifinal. No, it's not. We're going to go back to the same bullshit next month with Sakura Genesis and all the other shows they have going up to the Best of Super Junior, where we're going to see all of the guys from House of Torture retain their titles, and there's going to be something else where, like, Yujiro Takahashi and Ren Narita win the IWGP tag titles or something. Like, we're just going to be back where we started before this tournament happened. Nothing has changed, apart from the fact that this has just been a garbage tournament, and I'm not even looking forward to the Best of Super Juniors or the G1 Climax, because there's going to be more of this, because there's going to be guys in there as well from House of Torture.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I've done a lot recently where if it's a House of Torture match, I'll just skip it. Whereas this tournament was just absolutely full of them. And the matches that weren't House of Torture were not interesting either. I mean, people like Tangaloa stinking up the place, and it's just been dire. And hopefully it sort of serves as a wake-up call, because there seems to be a lot more negativity now than it's sort of reached its peak. But it's really, I'm getting towards the point with New Japan where I'm sort of thinking, like you said, why have I still got a New Japan World subscription? Because I watch at the minute two matches a month, because that's all that's interesting. Since Wrestle Kingdom, I've watched very, very little New Japan. I've watched a bit of the New Beginning shows and a bits here and there, but it's not keeping my attention, because it's draining watching a New Japan show these days, because you watch it, House of Torture will turn up halfway through, ruin their segment, but then they'll just keep turning up. It's like they sort of come back, and then they come back, and it's just constant, and it's not interesting. Something the Super J-Cast said is worth mentioning. They said it on Twitter, X, that it was not worth muddying the entire tournament just to get to that last moment of Evil getting his comeuppance, which is, I think that's what you were saying, isn't it, Fuser, that it's a lovely moment, this, that, and the other. The bad guy gets his comeuppance, but it's not worth the journey to get there that's so long and painful.
Yeah.
So like just dire, really, really dire.
Especially if, like, because Evil's the never open weight champion still. So he got his comeuppance for the tournament, and then he's just going to be in a match of Sakura Genesis where he's going to go, oh no, I lost the New Japan Cup. Well, looks like I have to defend the Nova open weight title. Oh, look, I won the match because of the House of Torture. So we're just, like I said previously, we're going to be back where we started.
Yeah.
There's no, like, it's a comeuppance for a small moment. If there is one match that sums up the entire booking of the entire of like all of New Japan right now, it is Evil versus Yota Tsuji in the semifinal, where the match started, there was so much interference from the House of Torture that LIJ ran down, there was a big fight and a bunch of just chaos everywhere. The referee throughout the fight ruled it a no contest, and basically neither guy went to the semifinals for this small moment. We basically had that the next match was the final of the cup because this match was a no contest. They got rid of all the House of Torture guys, they got rid of the LIJ guys, the match was restarted, they wrestled for about 8 minutes, and then House of Torture ran back out. What was the point? Why are we here? That sums up what we're dealing with in New Japan, where the House of Torture is there, they leave again, and then they come right back. This is annoying, this is garbage, this is not good booking, and to be perfectly honest, I think the only reason that it's still going is because the Japanese fans somewhat enjoy this, but I feel like the reason that they somewhat enjoy this is because this is new to them. The Western fans, we're tired of interferences and stuff like this, and disqualifications and all this garbage, because we see it a lot in our wrestling over here, whether it be WWE, TNA, AEW, etc. So we're already tired of it, and it's happening now in Japan as well. So, and it's happening a lot more excessively in Japan as well. So over there, it's not, if you're not like watching Western wrestling, then like this is like a new thing going on. But for the rest of the world who grew up on stuff like WWE and that, this is just the same thing that we've been watching for years, and like it's not what we came to New Japan for.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I don't like the argument where people say, oh, but the new but domestic fans like it, and it's just that doesn't negate or overrule the fact that I don't, just because someone else likes it, you know what I mean? I understand that the domestic New Japan audience does enjoy the House of Torture sort of stuff, and that's fine, but a lot of Western fans don't. So those two things can exist at the same time without, I guess, either of them being wrong, even though I do hope that the message is sent and New Japan sort of come away from that. I do want to touch a bit more positively before we go on a couple of the matches.
Sorry, can I make one really quick analogy before we move into a positive?
Yeah, sure.
You can take a dump in a bag and set it on fire, and someone else can still think that the fire that is very pretty, but doesn't change the fact that it's a flaming bag of poop.
Yeah, that does for me. Well, I'll switch very quickly to some positives. An odd match. We're recording this before the final, but it will be going out after the final, which is sort of that'll explain why we've not talked about that. The semi-final between Hiroki Goto and Sanada was all right. Some good kickouts towards the end, but it was just there, a lot of it. I saw some quite good remarks about this and thought, oh, I'll give it a watch. And it was a Sanada match. And I don't really rate Sanada still, so it doesn't do anything for me. A couple of the matches that did involved Shingo Takagi, his match against Uemura early on in the tournament. I think that was the first round, was great, really physical, energetic. And Uemura's got this new look now, which I did want to touch on. And he looks so much more menacing. Obviously, he had his hair shaved off when he lost to Yota Tsuji at, I think that was New Beginning. And he looks really aggressive and intense now. And I think it's a new look for him, obviously. And I think it's one that elevates him to a next level. So I think that's a positive to take out of it. Shingo's other match that I watched was his second round match against Gabe Kidd, and this was a a proper brawl for the first half with Gabe Kidd sort of playing that character he did in the G1 last year, sort of with a jump start. And then the second half, it felt to me more like a never open weight sort of match. If that does anything for you, I'd recommend those two. The only other one I have to pick out is a first round match with Yota Tsuji against Jeff Cobb. This is probably the match of the tournament for me. Obviously, the main event could usurp that, but as we stand at time of recording, match of the tournament for me, Yota Tsuji, Jeff Cobb, really, really great. Lots of counters that were very slick and fast moving, and tons of big, hard hitting physicality and intensity, and that, all the words I can think to throw at this. It was great, built really nicely to a real crescendo of near falls and counters and big moves in the finish. A really excellent match. And that is what New Japan should be doing more of, matches like that, which is what people watch New Japan for. The work rate, the big matches of these sort of, not superhuman, but these amazing athletes, that the way they sort of move around the ring, it's exactly what this match was. So match of the tournament for me, that one, and that is the extent of my New Japan Cup watching, because it's just not been good enough. But a few of you got anything to add or take away from that list?
I will double down on your match of the tournament, because I also agree that Tsuji versus Jeff Cobb was my match of the tournament as well. That was just a fantastic match. I also want to just throw out Gabe Kidd versus Shingo as well. That was another great physical match. Shingo Takagi is absolutely fantastic when it comes to a good physical match. And I also want to just mention Yota Tsuji versus El Fantasmo. Fantasmo is kind of a little, like, as of late, he's been a bit forgotten about when it comes to what he can do in a singles competition due to all of his tag work with Hikuleo at the moment. But he is still a very good competitor when it comes to a good one-on-one match, and him and Yota Tsuji had that.
Definitely. I think that probably sums it up, doesn't it? That was the other one, actually, that I was going to watch and didn't get around to, because that did have a good rating on Cage Match. So nice to see that one was also worth watching. But yeah, overall, like we talked about, not a New Japan Cup to get excited about. We will be back next month at the end of April. I'm sure lots more to talk about. Obviously, a lot is going to happen between now and then. Hopefully something a bit more interesting than what we've had overall to discuss, and the Champions Carnival will be underway by then. Fuser, where can the listeners find you?
They can follow me on Twitter at FuseBalor, and if you want to hear more of me, I am also on All Elite Listening and Total Nonstop Talking, both here on Wrestle In.
Fantastic. My Twitter is JJohnson_16. You find all my writing over there, some wrestling, some football, some bit of everything. I don't think my last article was out when this podcast went live last month. So my interview with Nathan Cruz, British independent wrestler, is on the website. That's like the next installment of my Keeping Up With The Indies series. So thank everyone for listening. Search Wrestle In wherever you listen to your podcasts, for as well as Pure Vision, all the other great podcasts on our network, including Fuser's podcast. It's sort of the Fuser podcast network at the minute. You're on everything, aren't you? But lots of great podcasts to be listening to. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you again next month.